Oh, hang on, I'm getting a knock at the door.
Oh dear. I'm getting a... oh, is it just me? Hello, listeners. It's lovely to see you and hear from you again. We will be cultivating this parasocial relationship as ever. What we will be doing this week is we will be discussing the difference between Quakerism and Christianity, and you will also require to turn to your textbook to page 54. You will find in that. Hello.
Welcome to Philosophy Today.
Oh, have you you heard all that?
Yeah, because I got Bluetooth headset.
This isn't. Oh, God damn it! Get some wired headphones.
And welcome back to Rails to Nowhere. My name is, as always, Simon, and joining me for returning back after her short absence is our fantastic Ella.
Hello. Sipping iced coffee.
We are recording on the first really hot weekend of June, and Ella has had to turn her air conditioning unit off. Can you hear my fan in the background, or is my microphone not picking that up?
I don't know. It's fine. I've got my air filter on too because of hay fever.
It's fine. We're not doing a proper... Well, we are doing a proper episode because you are our fantastic patrons, but we're doing one of our more laid-back patron bonus episodes, so it's a little bit less formal. And today we're talking about one of the characters related to the creation of London's public transport as a coherent network.
Yeah.
We are talking about American financier Charles Tyson Yerkes, who funded the creation of the Underground Electric Railways of London, the Underground Group, which was the first network of tube lines, I think it's fair to say, for London. He's one of the so-called robber barons. So these are American industrialists, mostly related to the railways, who come in, extract as much finance and wealth as they can from the system and then disappear just before it all goes belly up.
Yep, it's an incredible way to make your money. If anything, is the ultimate capitalism, which I highly approve of in many ways. Not capitalism, but just the turn up, make a ton of money, then, you know, bum off before anyone else realizes what's happening. We see this today too, which is excellent that, you know, the tradition is still alive.
Yeah, Yerkes' story is kind of minor riches to major riches to rags back to major riches again, because he makes a fortune in the banking system at Philadelphia. He then promptly loses that fortune, gets sent to prison for embezzlement, makes a second fortune in Chicago, where he then falls out of favour, and then is enticed to London to invest in its fledgling underground system.
Yeah, and he's one of these people who I think we could fairly describe as a guy, in this sort of like, you know, he is someone much like we see nowadays with people like Mr. Musk, and we see some of the names popping up from the Middle East of just like guys with lots of money doing ridiculous schemes. I think he falls into that.
Yep.
It's just that his schemes happen to be slightly more beneficial than some schemes proposed in the modern era.
Yeah. He's very much like Brunel in that he's sort of trying all sorts of things.
Just trying to see what works.
Part of his legacy is to leave behind things that end up being useful once the state starts taking care of them. Yeah, so Yerkes is born to a Quaker family. For those who don't know, the Quakers, or the Religious Society of Friends, is a Christian branch which is focused principally on pacifism and a sort of more collective religious perspective. We actually get a lot of Quakers coming up in this period investing in things, because when they make their money, generally their religious teaching is that they should be using it for the betterment of society rather than individual betterment. Yerkes kind of goes against that trend, but that's generally what's occurring at this point. So he starts his career as a financial broker and general financier in Philadelphia, which he gets quick connections to because his father is in the banking. There's nothing like nepotism to get you ahead, is there?
No, but this summarizes this period very well.
It really does. So his father is a banker, so he gets into banking in Philadelphia. And he quickly becomes involved in a really complex web of financial issues. Notably, in 1871, he invests a large sum of money from the City of Philadelphia's funds in the Reading and Pennsylvania Railroad.
Heck yeah.
Here are the railways. He's given a load of money by the city treasurer to invest.
Yeah.
Under the books.
And it's,
so this is proper, what's the word I'm looking for? Embezzlement.
Yes, embezzlement, backdoor dealings. And it's based on some pretty dubious information in some ways.
So the investment is based on the idea that the PRR. The Pennsylvania Railway, the PRR. Who have a legal battle going on to get direct access to Manhattan. So at the minute, they're having to go all the way up around the top of the Hudson, or you're having to get off at Newark and New Jersey and get one of the ferries across from Hoboken to New York, to Manhattan. They're in the midst of a legal fight with the city of New York about whether they can build the link to Pennsylvania Station.
Mm-hmm.
Or build Pennsylvania Station to begin with, and actually have the link across the Hudson into central New York. Now, of course, Manhattan and New York, major entry point for the US for both people and goods. So if they can get that direct link, that their quid's in.
Yep. And it's also massively advantageous to have a access to New York because of aforementioned goods and people. And also because it is one of the major hubs on the East Coast.
Yep.
It's a very much a hub. It's a port city.
In British railway parlance, it's the equivalent of getting a link to Liverpool or London.
Yeah.
In terms of the press. Certainly, in terms of the access to ports, it's like getting to Liverpool or the London East End. And in terms of prestige, it's like getting a link into London.
Yeah. And
think for the same reasons the Great Central Railway wanted a link into London. It's just the prestige thing, amongst other things.
Yeah. And he invests $5 million.
Yeah, so the PRR own the Reading and Pennsylvania Railroad.
Yeah.
Sorry, the PRR owns the Reading Railroad. And so Yerkes, as Ella says, invests $5 million in 1871. That's a lot of money. I've not done the inflation calculator. I'm not going to because they're really, really he invests $5 million into the PRR in the hope that his information that they're about to win their court case will mean that their stock price will boom and he'll be quids in and the city will be quids in and no one needs to know that they've embezzled some money and trying to cover their debts. However, shortly after he invests, at 8:30 p.m. on October the 8th, 1871, Great Fire of Chicago breaks out and destroys most of the city.
Yep, and that's quite significant. Chicago's a principal trade port, much in the same way that it's New York is a hub on the eastern seaboard. Chicago is a hub towards the more central, but like the inner bits of the U.S.
The Midwest.
I'm bad at it's, U.S. geography. It makes no sense.
It's also a major port on the Great Lakes, which
and
is
Great
a
Lakes.
Major shipping connection between parts of the U.S. and parts of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago is a central point of the PRR and the RRR.
It goes wrong.
It goes wrong. Their stock collapses. There is an enormous financial panic. It just, like, apart from anything else, it just causes a run on the stocks for all the railroads serving Chicago, because suddenly...
Well, sorry to cut that a little bit short, but that's all we're getting on the free feed for now. That was just an extract from our latest Patreon bonus episode. If you'd like to hear more of that episode and other bonus episodes not available here on the free feed, and to get a little bit early access to our free episodes, then head over to patreon.com/railstonowhere.